This is KERA News. I'm Eric Austin. On Tuesdays, KERA's One Crisis Away series examines life on the financial edge. Today, a look at Dallas's first comprehensive housing policy. It's designed to encourage the development of affordable housing and disrupt patterns of segregation and gentrification. Stephanie Kuo and Courtney Collins join me to talk about what this plan hopes to accomplish and why critics say it's just not enough. So, Courtney, what does the affordable housing shortage look like here in Dallas?
It's important to remember that while Dallas is going through a lot of economic growth, it isn't really translating across the city. 6 out of 10 people are what's known as rent burdened, which means they're spending more than 30% of their income on rent. The city's actually classified as short 20,000 affordable housing units. And in 2017, housing prices kind of showed their true colors. Nearly 58% of home sales at that point were priced between $300,000 and $1 million. So people are kind of running out of affordable neighborhoods.
And Stephanie, this housing policy from Dallas identifies neighborhoods that need the city's attention, and they call them reinvestment zones. And those are broken into three categories. They're redevelopment areas, stabilization areas, and emerging market areas. Why don't you walk us through those three terms?
Yeah, sure. A redevelopment area is basically an area where there's a project that could spur further development already set to begin or in progress within the next year. So the Redbird Mall revitalization is an example of that.
And what about stabilization areas? What are those?
This is an interesting one. So these are neighborhoods where redevelopment threatens to displace the lower income residents who are already there. So the area by the Margaret Hunt Hill Bridge in West Dallas is one of those. Vickery Meadow is another one. The housing policy says these areas need to be zoned to encourage mixed income development, but it needs to also include things like accessory dwelling units, like garage apartments. The whole goal with these areas is to preserve their affordability.
And emerging market areas.
So these are the areas that need a lot of work. Near UNT Dallas and around the Southern Gateway, they need infrastructure, environmental enhancements, code enforcement, and property nuisance abatement, and crime deterrence. All these things need to happen first before any development can happen at all.
Now, Stephanie and Courtney, you've both done a lot of reporting in neighborhoods characterized as stabilization areas, West Dallas and Vickery Meadow. Stephanie, what have residents in Vickery Meadow been struggling with?
Vickery Meadow is often characterized as a second chance neighborhood for new immigrants, undocumented immigrants, refugees, and just those who are generally low income. I have reported that development plans have driven up rents in the area, landlords are evicting tenants, and just this spring, a complex was bought out by Dallas ISD, and the tenants are being forced to leave with very few options inside and outside the neighborhood. These tenants may have criminal records, bad or no credit, eviction histories, so affordable housing for them is especially key, and being displaced would disrupt their lives completely.
And Courtney, you've spent a lot of time in West Dallas exploring gentrification issues in that neighborhood.
About a year and a half ago, we started telling the story of a group of around 300 low-cost rental homes that were slated for closure after the city found they were no longer up to code. Many tenants ended up actually purchasing their houses, but those who decided to move couldn't really find affordable rental options, especially with all of those high-end apartments being built in West Dallas. We're going to hear now from West Dallas community activist Ronnie Mestis and tenant Joe Garcia.
I call it the wall. It's the financial wall, you know, those new apartments that are right there, you know, because it looks like it just blocks out the whole neighborhood.
If I had the money, yes. Who wouldn't? But in the process of it, you know, it's a common sense that we just can't afford it.
So people who qualify for a Section 8 housing voucher have a lot of difficulty finding landlords who will take them anywhere in Dallas. Courtney, does the city housing policy address this in any way?
It actually does. And like you said, Section 8's pretty tricky in Dallas. There are no ordinances on the books for the city or anywhere in the state, for that matter, that kind of protect against source of income discrimination when it comes to housing. So landlords aren't really under any kind of obligation to take Section 8 vouchers. So what the housing policy addresses is that it's going to provide incentive to landlords. The example that's kind of written in the policy is if a fair market rate apartment is valued at $1,100, the tenant contribution would be $406, the voucher would kick in $694, and the voucher incentive that the city would kick in would pay an additional $220, therefore giving the landlord extra reason to take that Section 8 voucher.
And Stephanie, we know that there are critics of this housing policy. What are they saying?
Large swaths of the city aren't being formally targeted as these reinvestment zones. And so there's a map that the city released, and if you look at it, huge parts of South Dallas, especially around Fair Park, aren't being targeted. So tenants and advocates in this neighborhood are wondering, why not them? That's one of the complaints. The other one is that This plan just won't do enough to address the full force of gentrification, right? So especially in a city that's also simultaneously courting big corporate headquarters like Amazon, and when that happens, you drive up property values and the market gets flooded with higher income tenants and residents and it attracts all this development. How can this policy counteract those forces? The final thing is that a lot of tenants' rights advocates say it's just still not providing enough affordable housing to the lowest income tenants. So what is affordable to someone making $40,000 a year isn't the same for someone making $18,000 to $20,000 a year. So advocates and tenants are saying there just aren't enough units to address those at the lowest end of that spectrum.
KERA's Stephanie Kuo and Courtney Collins, thanks so much for your time.
Sure.
Thank you.